Good morning. Lawmakers call for answers over conditions at a U.S. aircraft carrier in the Middle East. MS Now has been speaking to the relatives of troops.
What these family members really want to emphasize is that these are real humans that are serving in this war, and this is not a material resource. These are people who have chosen to defend our country.
1 year on, how the National Guard deployment in D.C. has impacted the Capitol, and why it's been such a blockbuster year at the box office. It's Friday, August 14th. I'm Gideon Resnick in for Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. Military families are sounding the alarm over conditions aboard the USS Abraham Lincoln, with mounting concerns over the mental well-being of 5,000-plus crew members after an extended deployment in the Middle East. They've been deployed for around 8 months by now and haven't had a port call in over 200 days, a record, and there's been reports of deteriorating conditions on board. In recent days, stories have emerged of multiple crew members attempting to go overboard. Yesterday, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said the reports about conditions on the ship had been completely misrepresented.
Listen, we make sure that every ship, every crew, every captain has everything we can provide them at every single moment. Some deployments are longer than others, and I have more respect and gratitude for those sailors than anybody.
Now, though, crew members might finally be getting a break. It emerged yesterday that the U.S. was sending a replacement aircraft carrier, which the Wall Street Journal described as part of a scheduled deployment. It's unlikely to stop the scrutiny, though. Several lawmakers have asked the Pentagon for answers on the ongoing reports of poor conditions on the Lincoln. Priya Sridhar is the Pentagon correspondent for MS Now and has been speaking to families of the crew.
They had told me about some horrific conditions, including moldy showers, non-operational toilets, laundry facilities that were broken for weeks at a time, food shortages, and also shortages of basic hygienic products in the ship's store. So things like soap, toothpaste, and deodorant.
Sridhar did say that conditions had improved a little recently, but military family members detailed to her intense mental health challenges for their loved ones aboard the USS Lincoln amid its lengthy deployment.
The biggest concern that these families raised to me is they were worried about the exhaustion and the morale on the ship because of the fact that their deployment had appeared to be extended twice, and they felt as though there is no end in sight to this.
This month, MS Now talked to Brett Snow and Nicole Conrad, two parents with sons serving on the USS Lincoln.
They're willing to be there and they're doing their best, so they want our support. And part of that support means we have to have the tools to do our job. That means the fuel. That means the food, right? That means the food. That means the toothpaste and the deodorant. That means all of it, right?
I think the ship is doing what they can do with what they're given, but I think our government needs to be doing more for our military that's sitting over there.
In the last week, military families have confronted Navy leaders in two separate encounters, citing the conditions on the ship.
It was an extremely emotional, fiery, confrontational meeting where a lot of the family members raised concerns about the sailors' mental health. They acknowledged that this has been a very unique and challenging deployment. They said that we wish that we could give more of a definitive timeline on when there could be some relief for the Lincoln and when the Lincoln can come home.
Except for brief port calls in Guam in December and Oman in July, the USS Abraham Lincoln has been at sea supporting operations in the Middle East well beyond the deployment's originally anticipated end date in May.
I think that really is sort of the overarching issue to all of this is, was the United States military prepared to be in a war with Iran that is now going on 6 months, when initially this administration had publicly said Operation Epic Fury was going to last a few weeks?
The incoming USS George Washington had been operating in the South China Sea recently. Analysts told the Journal that its departure would leave a temporary void in the Pacific. Sridhar said that while there has been plenty of attention paid to munition shortages around the war in Iran, families tell her the human toll of the service members deployed overseas should not be ignored.
I think what these family members really want to emphasize is that these are real humans that are serving in this war, and they are struggling right now.
In a statement to MS Now, the Navy said they have not observed an increase in suicidal ideations aboard the ship, and that they take mental health of service members seriously. This week marks a year since President Trump sent the National Guard into Washington, D.C., an unprecedented use of executive power. And they're still there today. Thousands of guards patrol the Capitol in an operation dubbed Make D.C. Safe and Beautiful, at a cost of around $600 million so far. Trump has long criticized D.C. as dangerous and out of control.
Horrible, horrible, horrible. The capital of the United States of America, Washington, D.C., we will clean it up, renovate it, rebuild our capital cities so that it will be an absolute beacon of beauty and peace and prosperity and no longer be the crime capital virtually of the world.
Martin Ostermuhl lives in the capital and reports for Notice.
President Trump said the city was essentially in a crime emergency. Now, there had been a big crime spike back in 2023, but crime was starting to come down in 24 and into 25.
At the time, the murder rate was falling from its 2023 peak, the first positive sign after a decade trending upwards. Carjackings were starting to come down after a massive spike, and violent crime generally was declining, in a long way from the historic highs of the 1990s. Multiple studies have since found that the National Guard presence in D.C. has had no effect on violent crime, although there has been a decrease in opportunistic crimes like petty theft and vehicle break-ins. Still, more troops have been deployed over the last year by Republican state leaders, bringing the total number currently patrolling D.C. today close to 5,000. It's costing taxpayers roughly $3 million a day, and that bill will get bigger as Trump plans to keep the Guard in D.C. through the end of his term. The Pentagon has told Congress the extension could cost around $1.4 billion.
I think conservatively, you could estimate that by the time his term ends, we're talking $2+ billion to keep the troops here.
While that figure might be a drop in the bucket for the federal government, Ostermuhl told us that money could fund the entire D.C. Police Department for 2 years. While deployed, the Guard has largely patrolled high-traffic commercial and tourist areas, like the National Monuments. Despite being sent to reduce violent crime, residents and local officials say the Guard has largely avoided the most violent parts of the city. And their mission quickly expanded to include work that's typically handled by federal agencies like the National Park Service, picking up litter, fixing park benches, and laying mulch.
The worst you can say about them, in a lot of ways, is that they're not doing much of anything, so it's a very expensive photo op. And even the National Guard would probably, if you caught them off guard and they were willing to talk about this, they'd probably admit that they're not best suited to do the sorts of stuff that they've been asked to do.
Now, leaders in the National Guard have pushed back on the suggestion that troops are not contributing. At a press conference in early August, a brigadier general for the Guard in D.C. said that troops have supported law enforcement agencies, provided emergency medical support to hundreds of people, and helped dozens of lost children find their families over the last year. Ostermuhl says some locals are worried that the troops' presence could become a more permanent fixture.
Very few people want it to become normal because I think philosophically and politically they understand that having armed troops patrolling a city is not normal. And I think the big concern is that right now the National Guard could be doing not much at all, but they're also troops. And if they're told to do something, they will follow most orders. And I think the concern is if President Trump said, listen, I want you to crack down on D.C., you know, in theory, the Guard could do that.
Does it feel like everyone you know has been back at the movie theater lately? Whether it was to see The Odyssey.
Promise me you will come back.
What if I can't?
Or the latest in the Spider-Man franchise.
Hi, my name is Peter Parker. I have something to tell you that's gonna sound crazy.
Those were two of the five films to have already made $1 billion at the box office. And with a couple more tentpole releases on the way at the end of the year, it's quite possible it could come close to a record of $1 billion releases in a single year. But part of the reason why industry experts have been excited and a little surprised is where some of these hits are coming from. Outside of the bigger movies, there are successes from first-time filmmakers and former YouTubers to millennial nostalgia plays.
There were hits like The Devil Wears Prada 2, and then there were a lot of unexpected winners like Backrooms and Obsession, which were two low-budget horror films that weren't really on a lot of people's radars heading into the summer.
Rebecca Rubin is a senior film reporter for Variety.
And collectively, all of those films just resulted in what has already been the biggest summer since the pandemic upended the industry.
2019 is the year that the movie industry is chasing, and the one that holds that record for billion-dollar releases at 9 in total. The pandemic hit straight after, and it really took its toll on movie theaters.
So it wasn't just COVID, but also the strikes that happened at the end of 2023. It created a major production pipeline delay. And so movie theater owners were left without as many new movies to show. And that really hurt the recovery as well.
Isolated hits like Top Gun Maverick in 2022 and the Barbie and Oppenheimer double act in 2023 did bring people back to the theaters. But this year's steady drumbeat of popular releases has stood out. At the same time, this year's numbers are also being driven by more expensive tickets for premium format showings, like IMAX for movies like The Odyssey.
There's a sense that audiences, when they do go to the theaters, they want to distinguish the experience from watching a movie at home. And so they're comfortable paying a little more for a bigger screen, better sound, better visuals. And so that has been very popular and very important to both studios and movie theater owners because those tickets are more expensive than the standard ones.
Going forward, industry experts are closely watching what a potential merger between Paramount and Warner Brothers might do. Rubin said that when Disney acquired 20th Century Fox in 2019, their output decreased, and that contributed to lost revenues. Paramount CEO David Ellison has pledged that if the merger goes through, there would be 30 theatrical releases a year. Movie theater owners will be watching closely.
What they're really hoping is that studios take a look at the past few months at the movies and see the value of putting things in theaters. And their argument has always been that movies are not going to become cultural events without movie theaters. And so they're hoping that with a number of movies that managed to gross $1 billion this year, their argument is saying there's a lot of money to be made in theaters.
Here are a few other stories we're following today. A federal judge in Boston dismissed the Trump administration's lawsuit accusing Harvard University of letting anti-Semitism go unchecked on campus. The judge said that the administration did not provide sufficient evidence of ongoing violations of civil rights laws and that the instances they cited were, quote, too isolated and episodic. The lawsuit stemmed from pro-Palestinian demonstrations on college campuses over the past few years. The administration had sought to use the suit to recover billions of dollars in federal research grants awarded to Harvard. The DOJ indicated that it might fight the decision. The surveillance technology company Flock Safety said that it planned to implement new safeguards for its products. It comes after months of backlash towards the cameras that law enforcement uses for tracking movement of vehicles and collecting license plate information. The changes include shrinking the default amount of time that the cameras hold onto their data, and a new system that would flag abnormal activity, meant to address prior instances of police officers abusing the cameras and using them to allegedly stalk people. And finally, if you've never quite found the motivation for a marathon, what about one with 20 stops for wine drinking along the way? If that sounds good to you, then you might like an upcoming race through France's Bordeaux region. The Wall Street Journal spoke to experienced marathon runners who were gearing up for next month's event with a couple of new additions to their training regimen, like stopping at different pubs to down glasses of wine in preparation. Runners have 6.5 hours to finish the course, and if you so choose along the way, you can also stop for assorted cheese, oysters, ice cream, and even steak. If you feel like your body might reject this routine, there's plenty who do seem up for the challenge. The race sold out in 9 minutes, and the waitlist is 3 times the size of the field of competitors. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the News app right now, stick around for the latest episode of Apple News in Conversation. This week, guest host David Green talks to law professor and food safety expert Timothy Litton about what the summer of cyclosporiasis and other foodborne illness outbreaks reveal about the food safety system in America.
There's no such thing as zero risk in the food supply. You cannot grow and eat fresh produce and have zero risk any more than you could drive on the highway or local roads and have zero risk of getting into an accident. So there's a certain amount of risk that needs to be managed in the food safety system.
If you're listening in the podcast app, you can follow Apple News in Conversation to find that episode. Enjoy your weekend, and I'll be back with the news on Monday.